We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We are Haley from Taking a Kinder Path, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Erin, from Everlearning. We're gathering to have conversations about family life and home education, most specifically unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed education, or as I often refer to it, whole life learning. We'll be sharing experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us. Welcome back to the virtual kitchen table. It's Erin here today, and Ashley is back. We missed you for the first part of the math conversation, Ashley, so nice to have you here for part two.
Yes, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
And Sue Elvis is back. Sue was part of the part one conversation. So Sue, thank you for joining again and continuing our chat about this.
Oh, Erin, I'm excited because you invited me back again. So thank you. I'm looking forward to discussing one of my favorite topics.
Yes. Well, I think the last episode was really long, so we'll see how we do. We have lots to say, so we'll continue on and see where we end up today. And April from Modern Homeschoolers. April, really good to have you back again too.
Thanks, Erin. I'm excited to be here and continue this conversation well with all of you and Ashley with you too today. This is great. Thank you.
Well, and we kind of already got talking about this before we pressed record today, so we're obviously keen to talk about it again. So we'll kind of, I don't know that we'll jump back into where we ended, but there were some other things that we thought we could either elaborate on or a few things that we didn't even get to in the first conversation. But before we do that, Ashley, the last time we spoke, Sue, April, and I for part one, we started by just each sort of giving a little bit of a snippet about our background in math, not like our formal background in math, but what we remembered about math from our childhood or our teen years, or maybe even just something we notice about ourselves with math now. So I just wanted to offer you the opportunity to do the same thing before we dive back into some of the other things.
Yeah, thanks. I listened to part one and I really enjoyed the conversation, and specifically hearing about what each of you shared, you know, what math has looked like and felt like for you guys. And it did have me reflecting a bit, and I have given you guys a bit of a warning that I probably don't have as much to share, I don't think, but I was just thinking back as far as I could, and I was like, I don't have a lot of memories around learning math in elementary years. So kind of like, I'd say kindergarten, so like age like 4 or 5 to about age 10, 11, let's say. I think it was probably, I was just fine in math. Like, I don't think I struggled with it or had a hard time in those grades, but I don't think I had fun with it either. Because the memories I do have from those years in school, or just things that I enjoyed and like learning activities and stuff. You have a lot around like literature and different things like that. But not a lot in math. And then I do remember in grade 6, I was in a split class. So it was a grade 5-6 class and I was in grade 6. So I was part of the older bunch. And it's not that I didn't like the teacher that year. But I think the way she taught was just different than what worked for me. And that kind of, and I don't remember math being really difficult in that year, but that's like my earliest memory of, you know, something about math and having a bit of a tough time with it. And I would say like, even like disliking it. I think I disliked it quite a bit that year. So I don't know. And then maybe depending on, you know, whatever the grade 6 curriculum is, like what we maybe started with like algebra and stuff. I'm not sure. Something that year didn't work great for me. But then in grade 7, so I would have been what, like 12 or 13 years old, I really liked my teacher. And I remember really liking how he taught math specifically. So maybe that was because it was a bit harder for me in grade six, probably worried about grade seven, and sent, having a sense of relief that I was like, oh, I'm, and I think grade seven, I got my highest mark in math ever. And it was just, I remember he really broke it all down and it wasn't rushed. Because I think in grade six, I remember anytime I was stuck, the teacher would eventually get to me and then, but was never with me long enough. I needed her more, and the attention probably with, the split grades and maybe needing to get to the grade fives a bit more. I don't know. So grade seven was good. And then, so our high school is a bit different. I was in high school grade 8 to grade 13, so a really long stretch. And I have some memories of math early on in high school, pretty much none for like grade 11, 12, 13. I think it was just like a non-issue for me, but also didn't bring me any joy. I didn't enjoy it. I just did, I did it because I had to. But I was trying to think of like math outside of school during those times, and I really couldn't think of anything, which I thought was kind of interesting too. So I think when I think of math, at least in the past, it's very much from a school mindset, which is so different from what I'm seeing my kids experience. But then the last thing I'll say about like my own math experience, and again, this is, it's back to school, would have been in university. And I didn't have to do a lot of math, but I had to take statistics in second year. And it was very similar. I remember making the decision pretty much before we even started that I was going to hire a tutor, because I think I knew that I didn't see it as my strength. And I thought if I get a tutor, I've always just, if I had that one-on-one and I wasn't rushed and we didn't have to move on until I had figured out what we were doing, I was fine. And that's how that looked. But I remember not liking it. Like, I remember thinking, really wish I didn't have to take this statistics course. But interestingly, I used statistics in my graduate work and really enjoyed it and had no problems, which made me like, I was like, well, what's that about? But I wonder if it just had so much more meaning. Like, it was, I used quantitative research methods for my research, which I really enjoyed, and they served a purpose. And I really just had to do what I had to do for the research and nothing beyond that. So it's also, it's not assignments and things like that. But yeah, so I feel like it kind of was like looking at all, like everything I just shared, I was like, okay, well, the elementary years for me, learning basic math was kind of like practical, right? Learning how to add, learning how to subtract, learning about money, learning time, very practical stuff. I don't want to say high school math can't be practical, but you start to get into the more advanced math that I think I just didn't see a need for. And you hear students say that all the time, right? When am I ever going to need this? When am I going to use this? And then back to university was a little bit of both, a little bit like in second year being like, what do I need this for? And really not enjoying it. But then when I did need it at the end of university, it was just more useful. So it was just a different experience for me when there was a use for it, I think. And then I'll just finish by saying, I mean, I told you guys before we started recording that like I don't worry about the kids learning math too much. I just know because we know math is happening all the time. And because it's not something that I really enjoy playing with, I mean, some of it I do. I'm talking like math is so much, so many different things, which we'll get into today. But I just don't focus on it as much. I just know that it's happening. So I'm really glad that, yeah, they're experiencing math, I think, in a pretty different way than I did growing up.
I would have been so curious. I don't know if there may be no way to know this, but enjoying the quantitative research and enjoying the statistics in your graduate school, I wonder if you hadn't taken the statistics course, if you would have in, like would I guess the question is, could you have still done that work if you hadn't taken the statistics course. You don't have to answer it. Do you know what I mean? It's just interesting to think about, like, was it registering because you were interested and you were motivated, and that maybe that learning would have come without that technical first course, or maybe not. Maybe not, but yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know. I don't have, and I know you said, it's, you know, not a question necessarily to be answered, but I was thinking about that too, because that's when I get hung up with my kids, is thinking like, if they need this one day, will it help them if we, you know, start learning it now? And I'm just like, no. I mean, maybe, yes, sure. I mean, it probably depends on the kid. It probably depends on the person, right? For myself, looking back, I can guess that I would have been fine. Like, I don't think that second year statistics class, I think I could have been fine without that.
Yeah. I mean, this is a whole other topic, but higher formal education, they add in so many extra courses to round out their programs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, yeah, it's hard to know what's really needed and excuse me, and what's not. But okay, so one of the things at the end of our last conversation, I think we'd been like 2 hours, and then we all started rhyming stuff off that we still thought would be interesting to talk about. So, you know, we have a few of those jotted down, and I think we just wondered about starting with the idea. I had used the word gamification. I don't know if I've heard that. I'm not sure where I'm getting that word from. But what I mean by that essentially is almost like a sneaky learning. So it might be a sneaky learning on the part of a parent, kind of turning things into a game. Or it could be on the part of a company. Like there are a lot of video games and computer games and apps that, the idea is to make a game out of it. And I don't mean that that's always sneaky learning. Some kids really like doing those. But do you know what I mean? How sometimes you can just realize that they've kind of taken concepts that they want kids to learn, and they folded them in into kind of like a high reward atmosphere. Well, high reward, high punishment sometimes, right? If you don't, there are those games and sometimes it's like you fail or, you know, whatever. It depends on the game. They're not all that harsh. But just this idea of kind of having to make things really, really colorful and really, really fun to address a concept. And sometimes that concept can be learned really easily without flashy colors, without a lot of sound, if it's just relevant in somebody's life. And I think one of the reasons this came to mind for me is that depending on the personalities and the way that our individual kids are wired, for some kids, they really like that. Like I have a kid who loves like that reward, like games with rewards and trying to get to the higher level. And yeah, they just love that. Like it's a fit for them. But I have another child who it's like their radar is out. Like, oh, this is trying to teach me something. And not even just around math, around all sorts of things. Like I might've told this story before. I can remember watching a movie as a family, and it had like values baked in. Right. So there was kind of a set outcome of the movie, and the story was built around teaching this lesson kind of. And it was a decent movie, but we got probably, maybe 10 minutes in, and he goes, oh, I see what this is. He's like, I thought this was a regular movie. He says, they're trying to teach us something. And the whole story has been written to try to teach us this. I'm going to say he was 10 or 11, but I don't know for sure. But, and it was like a disappointment. Like all of a sudden, he's like, oh, you know, I see what this is. This isn't a real movie. And it's that idea of it not feeling real, of it not feeling authentic, because it's being packaged in a certain way to manipulate the learning. Even if it's coming from a benevolent place of, we think this would be really good for people to learn, or we think this would be really good for kids to know. For some kids, their radar around that is just really high. So, I mean, we watched the movie. It's not like he refused to watch it or anything like that. He was still interested enough in it, but it was so different than watching a movie or reading a book. There's a lot of books like this now too, that take a topic and they build it around teaching that lesson. And when you watch a movie or you read a story where it's just very, it's an authentic story. And some of those values might shine through, or some of those skills or information might come up naturally. That's a huge, especially for some kids, that makes a really big difference. That's kind of what I meant by gamification, or, you know, sneaky learning. And I would love to talk a little bit about how strewing can be misinterpreted, I think. And sometimes it is. Sometimes people strew with a different intention, but it doesn't have to be manipulative or sneaky. But before I dive into anything about strewing, did anybody have anything on the sneaky learning end of things, or can you relate in any way?
I definitely want to quickly say, just for other people listening too, because I would have liked to have heard this, and you, in a way, you have kind of already said it, but so maybe I'm echoing, but like, I have two kids, and both of them, like, what's coming up for me when you were talking was like, so there's one game called Prodigy. My kids did like that, but it was very much, because there's math in it, but it was very much about the game. And then, yeah, they liked that. But for the most, well, maybe I won't name the other ones. There were ones that were, definitely a learning game. And I had one kid that really didn't like it, and one kid who would tolerate it, but it wasn't their thing either. And I think sometimes parents can feel like a lot of pressure, right? Because like, well, it's a game and it's fun and look what you can do. And I just am, I think it's quite normal for there to be many kids who just reject that, and for different reasons. And that, I just want to be like, that's fine. That's okay. And I think maybe sometimes there's really good reasons why they're rejecting that, which you've kind of got into, Erin. So both mine are like that.
Well, and I think that math and reading is the other one, but there are a lot of those games, yeah, right? Those sort of learning games, and not just video games. There are a lot of board games that are like that as well, which is interesting, because board games in and of themselves often have a lot of just naturally occurring math. Or reading, if reading was the, but yeah, I find around math and reading, there's a lot of education. I think there's, is it called edutainment? There's another word that I've heard.
Yes.
I think I've got that wrong, but it's that same idea that we're taking something that's entertaining and trying to teach through it, which is a teaching method. I mean, that's, it's a method, right? It's a teaching method, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of video games and board games, I guess, that use math, but I think that's not the central idea behind the game. You just need skills in order to play it, and maybe your skills will improve while you're playing it, but that's not the basic idea. And I was talking with my daughters when they were younger about games that they can identify as games that were created to teach maths, and games that were created for the game but just happened to use maths. And kids are really clever, aren't they? They know which sort of game they're playing. Like you said, Erin, about the movie you were watching and how your son picked up on the fact that he was supposed to be learning something from watching this movie straight away. And my youngest daughter made a big mistake with her by pushing her to learn maths to the point where she said, "I hate maths, Mum," and I knew I had to about face and try something different. But I remember every time I used the word maths, she would just freeze. And one day I said, "I'm going to say the word maths, but why don't we just play a game together?" And she goes, "Oh, all right, Mom." And then she gradually flung herself down on the sofa next to me, and we had the computer or the iPad, whatever it was. And she says, "Oh, what are we going to play?" And I said, "What would you like to play?" She says, "You pick, Mum." And I picked this game that was supposed to teach kids how to learn their times tables, which was a poor choice. And so she started playing, and every round she couldn't get four times, 4 is 16, whatever it was, before I think there was something that was falling down the screen. I don't know if it was a balloon or something had been shot up into the air. And before it hit the ground again, she had to have the right answer. She had to type it in. And she wasn't getting the right answers. And each time she had this voice saying to her, "You failed." And I thought, oh, what a message to be giving kids. They failed. And then she said, "This is really boring, Mum." And I said, "No, give me a go." And she passed over the computer to me. And it took me about, I don't know, 20 seconds to agree with her. I said, "You're right, this is boring." And that was the last time we played that type of game. And I think sometimes the problem is that we expect kids to be interested in things that we're not interested in, that we wouldn't play a game like that. So why should our kids want to play a game like that? And if you contrast it with a lot of games that my adult children play, they're not my type of game, but the role-playing ones where they're out on a mission and they collect treasure along the way and they go up levels. And though I haven't played the games, I've just observed, it seems to me there's a lot of maths involved. You've got to calculate things. Do you want to buy this? Do you not want to buy this? Which of these tools is the most valuable and why? How much of an advantage will it give you if you swap some money for it? Is it worth the money? And kids are doing calculations, or adults are doing calculations all the time, trying to work out the best way to get through this area, this world, with the resources they have, and not waste the resources and not lose their lives. But that is a game that appeals to adults as well as kids, but it uses maths, and I think that's the difference. No adult is going to sit down and play a game to teach a child, to learn things like basic math skills. And we might say, well, we already know our basic math skills. We don't need to play them. But my kids didn't learn their basic, well, Gemma Rose never ever learned her basic times tables. In the end, we gave up. But that doesn't mean she can't do multiplication, and it doesn't mean she can't do them fast. It's just she didn't learn by rote to recite them out in an impressive way. And yeah, that to me is the difference, that children are clever and they can see when they're, as you said, Erin, when we're trying to sneak learning into them, and we call it, we're finding a fun way to teach our kids, or a fun way for them to learn. And yeah, I'm very skeptical about all that.
Yeah. April, do you have anything on that before we talk about strewing at all?
Just that I can completely relate. My kids are exactly the same, and especially my son. He can, you know, smell that from a mile away if I'm trying to get him to sit and learn something, or there's a game or a video or anything like that, that it seems like the main goal is to try to teach him something in some kind of, inauthentic way, he will have nothing to do with it. But, as Sue said, he is really into games that are really fun, and, he's learning math along the way. He'll do that all day long. The only one that they both kind of dabbled in a little bit, and my daughter still enjoys from time to time, is the math seeds one. But that one is nothing sort of forced on them. She still doesn't like when there's time limits and things, but she likes, completing a level and getting a little certificate on her, inner thing, and then they can use the points to buy little fake things in the shop. And so she's enjoyed that, you know, but it's never been like, you have to sit down and do this. It's math time. You have to do your, so it's always just been an option for her. And I think that's part of what she enjoys about it. And the animations are really cute and they're made for little kids. So that's probably a big piece of it as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think I can think of some games that I play too, that it's, there are reward things built in, like just word games and stuff like that. I'm not really a reward. Like I kind of just kind of click away and keep going. But again, I'm like an adult choosing to play this word game. Like there's no kind of backroom manipulation trying to get me to do this word game. It's something I'm doing for interest. But I do understand, like, as I said, one of my kids for sure really likes all those built-in rewards. And like, he'll even say to me, how many, you know, can you buy a new outfit for your character yet? And I'm like, I have no idea. And he's like, well, haven't you looked at how many, you know, levels or how many rewards? And so I'll have to go back and do that because it's just secondary to me. But he really gets into that, right? Like it's, he can get to this level, he can get outfit his character, whatever. So I do think that rewards are not inherently bad. It depends on the person and the learner. But I think it's just, there's just such a difference when kids come to something like authentically and as a natural part of their life versus feeling, well, you know, I think not all kids actually do realize that they're being sort of, that the sneaky learning is happening, but some definitely do. As we've just, you know, figured out that some of our kids definitely realize that. And then, so just thinking about strewing, because I think people look at strewing differently as far as how they would define it or how they use it. And we did another episode with Kendall from Spark to Flame Home Learning about strewing, which I really enjoyed, Ashley. I just feel like we dug really deeply into, well, definitely ideas, but also our motivation.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I just wondered, I mean, Sue, I know for you, you were in a location where you needed to keep homeschool records, and you have lots of good math resources on your website. And I'm imagining that some of that you probably developed lots of ideas and sources over the years that were helpful, right, for record keeping and for being able to just show what you were, you know, maybe not necessarily what your kids were learning, but what you were introducing at least to your kids.
Yeah, and school maths became my mission once my kids announced they didn't like maths, that I hate maths. I just felt so sad that the way it was presented to them had turned them off the subject. And I thought, well, perhaps they would enjoy maths if they saw it in a different way, if they understood what it's really about. It's not really about learning all these formulas and all these rules and having numbers as separate from life. It's not just numbers, it's patterns and all sorts of other interesting things. And so I set myself a mission to find as many interesting maths resources that I could to strew in front of my girls. And oh, I was continually looking. Every time I got a spare half hour, I would open my computer up and do some more research, and I would eliminate a lot of them that said they were real life maths, but I couldn't see that that's what they were. Again, it was real life maths, but did they think parents were stupid as well? That we all want real life maths resources. It's a very popular thing to Google because, of course, I guess we all want our kids to have math skills, but we might not be doing it in a traditional way. How else are they going to pick up these skills? How else are we going to get our kids excited about maths? But a lot of the sites weren't real life maths at all. There, for example, I Googled real life maths, and this is a problem that came up. It was supposed to be an example of real life maths, and it was talking about, I've got it out of my head now, that when you've got triangles with the angles, what branch of maths is that? You've got hypotenuse, tangent, and you've got your angles. You've got your hypotenuse, your tangent, and I can't remember the other side of the triangle. Sorry?
Like geometry? Trigonometry?
It wasn't geometry.
I don't know.
It's a special branch of maths, like calculus. Yeah. It's not calculus. Yeah. It's not statistics. It's just gone out of my head what it was, but it's all based on triangles. And you've got to learn that for this angle, it might be hypotenuse over opposite, whatever it is. And there's a number of formulae that you learn so that you can calculate the size of the triangle sides and also all of the angles. And I thought, well, when are my kids ever going to use this? And the example was, imagine if you have a ladder leaned against a wall and you know the angle it's leaning at and you know the length of one of the sides, you'll be able to calculate the height of the ladder. And I thought, are they serious? Why don't you just put the ladder on the ground, get your tape measure out, measure it? Why do you have to do all these complicated things, look a formula up, put it all into this equation, and come out and measure the angle? And the other one was, if you were flying on an aeroplane and you knew the pathway you were flying along, you could, and the angle that the plane was at, you could calculate the distance to a particular place. And I thought, how do we know what the angle is for a start? Do we go up to the pilot and say, hey, what angle is the plane flying at, please? And get all the other information. It didn't seem like a real life example to me. And I thought, they're trying to persuade us that these are real life examples when they're not. But I found a lot of other good stuff while I was doing my research. And I ended up with a whole, well, it was a Turing notebook, a digital notebook full of ideas about math that I had no idea about to begin with. And then I would strew them all in front of my kids. And some of them were very successful and some of them fell flat. But for example, I don't know if any of you have heard of the Numberphile YouTube channel.
The Numberphile.
Numberphile. And many enthusiastic mathematicians put that site together, and some of the videos are beyond my kid. Were beyond my kids, and some of them were beyond me. But there were a lot there that we enjoyed, such as the ones about pi and the ones about the Fibonacci numbers. And we ended up composing music based on the Fibonacci numbers and designing tartans based on Fibonacci. And yeah, the pi videos especially were really good. And maybe they don't sound like real life myths. Maybe that's not a good example of real life myths, because maybe that's more of an example of how exciting and interesting and creative maths is. That and people were using those things in their work. It was just not real life for us, but it was certainly interesting. And yeah, I got a lot of ideas from my research, which was just as well, because as you probably know, we had to prove that our kids were learning the maths that kids in school were learning. And how were we to do that if we weren't using workbooks like the school kids were? That was a huge challenge for me, but I managed it. And I think it's possible, yeah, by some clever strewing, some clever record keeping. But I'd forgotten your question, Erin. I went off on a tangent.
No, I think that was all, it was all related. I think I was talking about string and just saying that when people are having to record keep, they need to think about it differently. So
I think there was two reasons I wanted to strew. One was for the record keeping, to prove my kids were learning, and one was to excite my kids about maths because they've been turned off by the traditional way. And so maybe that rounds it up. I wanted them to have the opportunity to see maths as an exciting and interesting topic, but I also needed those homeschool records so that we could continue unschooling.
And you gave me a fun memory about the Fibonacci sequence there. I remember being in an escape, one of those escape rooms with my family, and we had just done something with it on some sort of a challenge, maybe similar to what you're talking about, Sue. And it was fresh in my mind. And then that was one of the challenges to get out of the room. And I just remember being so excited. I'm like, oh, I just refreshed my memory about this. So it is fun sometimes to have that prior information and be able to use it. But it's really fun when that information has been something you've been ready to learn and interested in learning, right? And I think the idea of offering resources and ideas in a particular area to our kids, because on the one hand, we could say, well, math is part of life. And, you know, it just is, we don't kind of need to think beyond that. And I think that's valid. It's kind of one of those things where you can see it in both ways, if we're talking about unschooling or kind of like self-directed learning. So that's true. Math just comes up. But if it is something that we're interested in, and we are finding interesting resources, I think it can be really fun to, again, we have to kind of check our motivation, but it can be interesting to present different ideas, and not any different really than if we had a passion for a particular sport or nature or music, and we kind of want to share that with our child. I think probably where the sticking point is that because it's a school subject, you know, maybe there are people who aren't particularly excited about it, but are just putting things forward, kind of trying to sneak that learning in.
I've just remembered what that maths branch of maths that I forgot it was is called, and that's trigonometry.
Okay, yeah.
This website was trying to prove that trigonometry is relevant in real life situations.
And it is, depending on your life.
Depending on, exactly. If you're a pilot and you need to calculate the distance or the angle, then yes, but the passenger doesn't.
Right, right.
And if that ladder had been fixed against the wall, maybe, and you couldn't move it, but why would you need to know the height of it anyway? You could just measure, you could, I don't know. I used to always get so angry about what people were trying to pass off as real life maths, as if we were stupid, the parent, the adult, that it works exactly. Another example, there was this website to teach maths. It was a maths website, and they offer it in schools because my husband got a chance to trial it in his school with his class, but I had already discovered it with my own children, and it's all based around games. Can't remember what it was called because it hasn't left a lasting impression on me, but all the concepts were taught with games, educational games, and there were also exercises where they had to fill in the answers in the traditional way, but they could play a game to illustrate the concept and to reinforce the concepts. And yeah, that didn't last long with my kids either, because it was obviously something that was educational. If you were a mathematician, you could get a lot of jobs in gaming for educational purposes, because I think that's where a lot of learning has gone. We've gone online, we've gone to games, but is it what our unschooled kids are finding interesting enough? That might be an alternative, I think, for traditional learning, but it didn't work with mine anyway. I must say that initially I did get excited about all these things. That was well at the beginning of my quest for my quest to excite my kids in maths. And I did get excited. I got excited by all these interactive websites that had the levels and the avatars and the rewards. And when that failed, I went into games. And I do reckon that if you're a computer gaming person, you're going to easily get a job in the educational field. And people that parents say, sometimes say, well, he wants to play video games all day, and there's no jobs in video gaming, which I think is totally false. But what about educational gaming? That's a huge market.
And yes, big business.
And I just think that I was looking at it as a bridge from traditional to unschooling. Could we sort of compromise, make it fun, but not let go of it completely? And it didn't work for our family.
Mm-hmm. We had one, now that you're saying that, Sue, I think sometimes it can be fun to see if your child is interested in a particular concept, because there's that whole idea that they don't know what they don't know too, right? So my second guy became super, super interested in Roman numerals. And so like the basic ones on, you know, like a classic clock, but then figuring out higher and higher ones and getting quizzed on them. And I don't know, I can't remember all what he used to use, but there were different challenges that they would give you the Roman numeral version, and you had to figure out what that number was, and they kind of got higher and higher. And so that was something I introduced, and he was super interested in that. The other thing was a clock game. It was like the analog time, matching the analog time to the digital time. And yeah, we really enjoyed that. And that game was definitely a game for telling the time. I think it was called Timing It Right. And it was, I mean, that was its express purpose, was to teach kids to tell analog time. But it was fun. And whoever I was doing with it at the time was interested in it. So I don't think it's this idea that we have to like hide from concepts. We can see, like, you know, are you interested in this game? Are you interested in learning about this? There's definitely some value in those things if the time is right and if they're interested.
Yeah, I think in thinking about the more like educational video type games, because I know that's kind of come up in conversation in person and kind of not just homeschool circles, but just with parents and even family members. And there's kind of this idea of like, well, if I've heard this, right? Like, well, your kids really like video games. So, you know, are they into this educational app or educational game? And I think maybe now seeing, like looking back, it's easier to see. But like when I sit down, like I just think like, well, why not work with, like observe what learning's already happening in the video games that they already like, because we know math is so involved in everything. Let me see if I can pull it up. I've known for a long time, because Minecraft's been played in our house for years now. And I've played with them, but you can even just sit down and watch, you know, 10 minutes of Minecraft, your kid playing Minecraft, and you will see the math. It's not hidden, although they don't think they're doing math. But they're just playing the game, right? It's not, Minecraft wasn't designed to teach kids math, but there's so much math in it. And actually what I did yesterday, I have it here. is I just wanted to write down, because I knew math was happening. I could see it. I knew I was using math when I played Minecraft, but I didn't break it down into kind of like the more academic, like the more like different school math subjects, right? So I made a list, and it's much more than this, but I've got geometry, navigation, like using the coordinates, estimation, area, volume, inventory, like keeping their inventory of all their items, ratios, there was probability, statistics, trading, because if they get, well, they can trade. And then I've noticed with Minecraft specifically, and I think that's a good one to use because it's such a popular game. As my two have gotten older and played with the game longer, the way they interact and play the game is different. So what was the example? Like farming is, they start farming. So they have their crops and everything, and they're counting, like they're building their gardens and figuring out like what they need to grow and how many things to trade for this item. And then they get into like circuit building and stuff, like stuff that like when I played Minecraft, I didn't go that far into it. They can build a lot of really neat things, and they're using all these different mathematical concepts while they do it. So I always think like once, I mean, because we had, how old would my oldest have been when they started Minecraft? I don't know for sure, 6, 7 years old, definitely by 8 years old. So pretty young. And we wouldn't have had the educational apps in use much earlier than that, probably around the age of 6. So I just think like, well, just do play Minecraft. Once you see all the math that's happening, you know that they're working on those skills and using the math concepts, and they're just having fun. And then I feel like maybe that takes the pressure off of, because I hear that a lot, like, well, if they like video games, they'll love this math app because it's a game and there's rewards. And I'm like, it's really not the same. And like you guys have said, there's absolutely some kids who will enjoy that and play it, and that's great. But I don't think it's odd for kids to not have interest in that. And I don't think it's discouraging, because they're going to be, if they're a kid who likes video games. And I did the same thing with Fortnite, because that's another popular game in our house right now. And again, it was so easy to see all the math that was happening. A lot of similar math to Minecraft, but different stuff too. I won't even try to explain it because I have not played Fortnite. but I just think with like, yeah, the idea of strewing and math, I like to kind of step back, I guess, and think what's already happening and what's already taking place. I have a couple more things to add about strewing, but I want to wait to see. I can come back to the strewing pieces later because it's not video game related.
I just want to say one thing quick and then give April a chance if she has anything popping up. But, you know, your idea there, Ashley, that people might say, oh, if they're liking this, they might enjoy this math game. And then it's not feeling all that exciting just to play the math game. But it's that idea of teaching skills in isolation and out of context, right? It's you're isolating these skills and they're not related to anything that's happening in the moment the way they would be for your kids when they're building with Minecraft or they're on a quest of some kind in a video game or just in their regular life. And so I think that kind of helped me define it there, you just giving that example, but it really, I think that is a lot of what we're talking about, is teaching skills for the sake of them out of context to the activity or the child's life or our own, even for ourselves, right? Our own lives as adults. It's difficult to, if we suddenly become interested in, we think, I really want to do a certain type of gardening this year, it's much easier to just absorb that information in all kinds of different ways. But somebody just saying to you, I'm going to, you know, here's some multiple choice things about gardening, completely outside of your interest, is not exciting and is not going to stick in the same way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, April, do you have anything? If you don't, it's fine. I just thought,
sure. I'm going to try and just sum it up, because I feel like the way that we have approached sort of math and strewing math is kind of connected to everything that you all have just talked about. So I think that going back to what Sue is saying, I think I was very conscious from the beginning of trying not to turn my kids off of math. So I was doing exactly kind of what you were saying, Ashley, in keeping things, looking for the math and sort of where it was just coming up in everyday life. I was super intentional about, I never wanted to divide anything by subject for my kids or take it out of its, you know, sort of natural habitat, if you will. But when I started thinking back about strewing math, I don't know that I ever did that sort of in isolation, but kind of accidentally, I feel like I ended up with like the ultimate strew with teaching my kids about business when they were, what I realized today, very young, because we started doing entrepreneurship stuff when I look back today and my daughter was only 2 and my son was 5. And it was this idea, I can't even remember exactly how it came about, but maybe we had seen a lemonade stand. And so my kids probably asked about it, or I was thinking maybe we should do it, but I really didn't want to deal with the mess of making lemonade. That was kind of the first thing that was on my mind. And it was sort of during the COVID times as well. So it was 2021. I was like, no one is going to want to drink any kind of sticky anything that has been made by children. And I really wanted to come up with something that they could do more than once if they really enjoyed it. And I felt like a lemonade stand was a little bit of a one-off. So we came up with the idea of setting up a little business in the driveway around, I think we were calling them Fun Pops or something at the beginning. I think in Canada, we call them Freezies. Mm. And in America, I think they're called different things in different places. Maybe, you know what, I can't even think of what the name is here. But my kids ended up calling them Fun Pops and Cool Pops. You know, do you have them, Sue? In Australia, where they are, it's almost like an icy in like a plastic tube, and they come in different colors and flavors.
Yeah, but I can't remember what they're called. Yeah. Sorry.
So everybody sort of has their own version, I think. But mostly you can only buy them, at least here, you can only buy them in the grocery store. So if you just want one, you can't actually get one from anywhere, and you would have to freeze it yourself. So I think that also worked in our favor. But anyhow, so we started just, she was 2 and he was 5, and we started with really simple things where we were able to grab a few bags from the grocery store, and they sorted out their inventory and they bagged it, and they were able to, you know, sort out the flavors and make their posters. And it just naturally, became this way of learning all kinds of math, but in a real world context. So they were doing everything from, you know, inventory to marketing. They set up, we had a cash box, and they set up their float. So they had, you know, $20 in small bills and coins that they would count out each time. And this was more him at the time, because she was only 2, but she was, you know, sort of picking it up as they went along. And then they were dealing with customers out on the street, you know, and having to give change and talk about pricing. So we had those conversations. And then we were able to, you know, count the money afterwards and talk about revenue and talk about, you know, our expenses and our profits. And it was interesting, I think, and related to what you were talking about, Ashley, where it's been interesting because they have done this now every year for 4 years, and each year they just sort of take it to a different level, and they take a little bit, you know, more out of it, I would say. Or they get a little more out of it, but it really depends. I haven't sort of pushed an agenda with it. It's kind of like they will bring it up and they'll work on it together. And their products now have, I think they did the Cool Pops thing for 3 years. And now this year, all of a sudden she's wanted to do keychains, and they just added snow cones. And now they saved up their money. Actually the second year he was able to buy a bike with the money that he saved. And now they just bought a 3D printer. And so they've got this whole other plan now of 3D printing, you know, products that they can sell, and that will pay for their filament, which is kind of the, like the plastic material that you put inside the 3D printer. That's the only sort of recurring cost. But anyhow, it's just been, it's been really fun to sort of see this evolve and have them really, it's very self-directed at this point. And it's also been really fun to see them involve their friends and the kids on the street. And it's become this neighborhood thing that happens in our driveway, sort of every, it runs all the way from spring until winter, basically. It's like a March through November, I would say, activity kind of off and on when they feel like doing it. But it's saved me a lot of mental energy in coming up with different activities to strew. And I did not really realize that until today when I was looking back at it.
Yeah. Well, and if I look back at my kids too, April, like I can think of a lot of different entrepreneurial pursuits. And so there's the math involved in setting it up. And I mean, so I think people think, oh, you know, making change, and there is that, but there's also a lot of math involved in, depending on what it is you're selling or service you're providing, there's often just math in figuring out, you know, measurements and time, those sorts of things, right? But what I found too, then, when they had that money and they were able to make purchases, mm-hmm. I don't know about your kids, but for my kids, there was a lot of like comparison shopping that happened.
Oh, yes.
A lot, right?
Oh, yes. And yes. You know, absolutely.
What was the better deal? Okay, this product might have more in it, but what's the actual, you know, price per unit or price mm-hmm. weight or mass or whatever? And sales, and what percentage were the sales? Like, there was just, I think there was more math figuring out the purchases than mm-hmm. than the actual business. That's such a big part of it. Or we would do, oh my goodness, one of my kids at the, I'm trying to think what the name is of the stores. It's like a buy-in, like you take something in and they buy it from you to sell secondhand.
Okay.
Anyway, I can't think of the actual name of it, but oh my goodness, so much time preparing like toys or video games to sell and deciding on a price and then lugging them down there. That's my word. Taking all the stuff, and then the storekeeper would give them a price, which my son usually didn't accept. So he, I don't know why we kept trying, you know, he would go down there and he'd be like, I'm not selling it for that amount. And so then talking the whole way home about, you know, value, and that was just all part of, it's just all part of, I mean, he just has a mind where he likes to wheel and deal. Like he just loves that kind of stuff. Right. But there's so much to that beyond just, you know, adding and subtracting. It's percentages, it's ratios. There's so many pieces that enter into that just completely through their activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's so real world, right? It's so meaningful and tangible, to them. And, yeah, it's funny, Erin, that you said that about shopping, because I didn't see the relationship between those two things immediately. And but I was having a conversation with my husband right before we recorded, and I just said, where do you see the kids like really using math just in everyday life? And that was the first thing he said was, oh my, you know, like think about when he wants to buy something. Like he will never buy the first thing that he sees. And he's like, even with the 3D printer, it was like, okay, let's see how much it is on Amazon and on the website. And then we'll check here. And then, well, we have to figure out like, if it has free shipping, or do you get a deal if you spend this much money? And he just notices, like he has such an appreciation, I think, now for the value of these things because of these experiences, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I actually had like pocket money or allowance written down for today, because I think that's been, I mean, our two have had an allowance for years now. I don't remember how old they were when we started, but it just made a lot of sense to me for them to have money to use. And I mean, it's still a relatively small amount, which they remind us of often. but it's given so many opportunities for them to, learn the value of things, save for things, spend and then not have money when they want to buy something. And then also, like, as they've gotten older, kind of like the entrepreneurship stuff, or Erin, what you were talking about, like, my kids like to take their really good Pokemon cards into trading card shops, and they will ahead of time, they have an app on my phone where they can assess the value of their Pokemon cards. So there's a lot of math involved in that. So they prepare, very similar to what you shared, right? And then they go to the Pokemon or the trading card shop and, you know, try to, I mean, one day, my one kiddo, I was blown away because I was like trying to set realistic expectations, I guess. And I was like, I don't know how much, because I had never done anything like this. I said, I don't know how much you will get for these or what the offer will be. You don't have to accept the offer. And I did a lot of prep work around that. And when the guy, he took some time looking through all the cards and he came back and it was over $100 for like this little stack of cards. And I was blown away. And of course, my kid was happy, thankfully, probably because I really was like, it's probably going to be, you know, $20. So that was a really fun experience. And they've done that a couple times. But that I think all came from having the experience with the allowance and having, you know, we would always give them the same amount every week and they get their raises because they negotiate those too. And then realizing, how can I have more money and let's go sell Pokemon cards. Or, we've done a couple things in the driveway, but more so, we've done a couple kid markets. So similar to your experience, April, where they come up with something and they sell it to make more money. But really all that experience with money has been like, when I really stopped to think about it, just we've covered so much over the years around that alone. I just see it going on as they get older too. Similar where it's almost, I don't want to say I don't strew math stuff because I do, but not really ever for the purpose of teaching a math skill. Mm-hmm. Because it's just happening like through all of these examples that we're sharing.
Erin. I'm backtracking here, but something that April said that sparked a thought, and it had something to do with what I said earlier. We've never done lemonade stands or anything like that, though all of my kids have had their ventures out to try and earn money, like they've offered themselves for doing odd jobs. Elvis, my two sons, they set up themselves as an odd job venture. Got some regular work cleaning people's houses, but it was a lemonade stand I was thinking about. There's a website called Cool Math Games, and my kids used to love playing the lemonade stand game on that site. And I think there's a coffee shop one as well. It's probably a pizza shop one. And the point I wanted to make was that sometimes games, which are designed to teach kids maths, our kids, and you were saying that some kids like playing that, and then it sparked this memory of the lemonade stand and how my kids did enjoy some of those games that were on that site, which had been set up to teach kids maths, but they were very picky. They looked for particular types of games. They never played the multiplication times tables ones, but they were interested in the business ones, and I can't remember others, but I do remember having a go at one day that there was a track and you had to keep your person in the center of it and not touch the sides but the ground was icy and it was very, very difficult. And I have no idea what the math concept was behind the game. All I remember was I could never make it down the other end and I could never progress to another level. And I had to ask my kids to come along and help me get through the level so I could try the next level. And so there must have been something else about that particular game that wasn't rote learning of maths. It must have been interesting enough. And that made me think that even though some sites advertise themselves as real life learning for maths, and I might disagree, it didn't mean that we didn't use them, because we dipped into them in our own unschooly way. We chose the games that we liked, or we looked at the, for example, there's another site called Yummy Math, and it's supposed to be real life maths examples, and it is. But next to that is all these workbook calculations you're supposed to do. The story illustrates a maths concept, and then the child is supposed to go and do the workings out that have something to do with that story. For example, I remember one about the waste that accumulates on cruise ships. Somebody works out the amount of waste that accumulates during a cruise, and where does it go, and how much does it cost to get rid of it, that type of thing. And my kids found it very interesting that maths was being used in these ways, but they had no desire to work their way through the problems that the people on the cruise ships would. They didn't want to follow in and work it all out for themselves. They were quite happy to know somebody has this job working out how much waste is produced by a cruise ship with this amount of people on, but they didn't want to work it out for themselves. Somebody else had that real life maths job, and my kids didn't want to just do it. It was like somebody had already done it. Why do I have to do it? They've done it. They know. Why do I have to work it out to see if I get the same number as they've already produced? And so what we used to do is read all the good and interesting stories, watch the videos, and forget all about the workbook stuff. So I've gone back a bit. Just wanted to clarify that even though I did find a lot of real-life maths sites, which weren't really real-life maths, it doesn't mean that there weren't interesting things on those sites and that we can't dip into them in our own way. We don't have to do all the examples. We can just enjoy the stories or whatever else they're offering. We can just pick and choose between the games. This one doesn't appeal, but this one might. And so that I ended up not rejecting everything and just saying, oh, that's not real life maths. And in the end, I was a bit more, I took the time to have a good look to see if there was anything there that would interest my kids. And then they used some of it, they rejected some of it. But yeah, I just wanted to clarify that. I wasn't saying don't use real life maths resources, because some of them are good or they have some good bits. But what I'm really interested is what you're saying, Ashley, about identifying the maths in our everyday lives and not even go looking for. I felt I had to go looking because I had to have lots of maths notes in my homeschool records book. And I didn't have enough from everyday life. And that's not quite true, because once I started looking at my kids' passions and interests, I did find a lot of maths, like you found all that maths in Minecraft. And the other thing I wanted to ask, if anybody knows, is there's probably a lot of AI sites like this, but there was one in the community, Erin, I think Shelley gave us a link to, that if you put in a particular activity that our kids are doing, like playing Minecraft or playing Barbie dolls or setting up a lemonade stand, instead of us sitting there thinking, now what math skills are there, we could ask AI to list all those skills for us, which is really wonderful when it comes to homeschool record keeping, because that it picks up things we might not see. And I think that's the problem sometimes, isn't it? That we don't see the mess that's all around us sometimes, that we get used to not seeing it. We use it, but we don't register it. And our kids don't see it either. And then when it comes to things like having to prove that our kids are learning math, we get stuck. And sometimes we need a bit of help to actually tune our eyes in. I think you were talking, April, about putting on your detective eyes and seeing things through the maths lens instead of just, this is the way we're living our lives. But once you start putting those glasses on, maths just sort of jumps out at us. I don't know if you found that, Ashley, but once I started searching for it deliberately, I saw it everywhere. But the AI, I don't know if it was a web, I think it was a website, it was a real help in putting everything into educational language, like they would have at schools, that we might not be interested for our own sakes, but schools, education departments, that's what they expect. So I don't know if anybody knows what I'm talking about or whether it was in the community, Erin, quite a while ago.
Yeah, I do know. I do remember that, Sue. And you're right, like super helpful if somebody's just, because what comes to mind when you're saying that is that we're not necessarily like schools and homeschool curriculum that has testing. There are regular ways that, you know, kids are quote assessed, right? But when kids are going about their regular life, I mean, even, you know, April talking about entrepreneurship and all these things, we know that there's a huge amount of math being learned. And some of it we can see, but we also know that our kids know a lot that we aren't even necessarily aware of. So I think that if you're having to keep records, something like that is really helpful to just kind of pull up those terms and those specifics. But yeah, we're not, and I mean, April, you and I think had a chat back and forth about this idea that assessment of kids and the assumption that what's in their brains is kind of our business, which I know sounds because of the way our school system works, that seems maybe like a very radical thing to say, that it wouldn't be our business what's in our kids' minds, because our whole system is based on figuring out whether they've learned what we've tried to teach them. I mean, that's the big point. Yeah. Is the testing and the assessing and so to say that it's, you know, we don't always know what our kids are thinking or have learned, I think that sounds like a radical thing. But when you kind of, when you've been living this way for a period of time, I think that becomes, that seems more natural to understand that about our kids. But I also think it becomes clearer to us that we truly don't know. You know, sometimes our kids will do something and you'll think, how, where did that come from? I don't even just mean a random fact. Like there have been skills that have been building that were not obvious in any of the other activities they were doing. And all of a sudden they do something and you're like, oh my gosh, that was all in there or in the process of developing, which is really hard to explain within kind of the conventional test and assessment way of doing things, right? Yeah. But yeah, sorry, Sue, I kind of took that in a different direction, but I think because of that, some of those tools are really helpful to be able to, if we do need to offer an assessment or an overview, being able to kind of plug something in and figure out. Still, we might not, the thing is, we still might not see what our kids are learning to be able to put it in, but there's some helpfulness, I think, in having some language around that. But Sue, I just wanted to say, there was something you said, I think you were talking about the cruise ship game, and even though there were a lot of pieces of it that were interesting, the idea of it not being all that interesting to solve something that somebody else has already figured out anyway. And it reminds me of like what we call science experiments,
where kids are given, you know, a list of materials and this is what you do, but the outcome has already been figured out. They're just really, it's not really an experiment. It's more of a demonstration of what somebody else has decided you should learn and hopefully find interesting to see the reaction to it. That to me, it's that same distinction of like following the steps to do a standard science experiment versus a kid really working away at something on their own or deep in play or even helping do something for the family. And they have a scientific discovery or they notice something. And I think math can be very much the same that way, can't it? When people are basically saying, here are 20 questions, you know, there's an answer key somewhere. So you're not really, you know, you're not, there's no originality involved in this. You're just following the steps to prove whether you can get the same answer that, you know, has already been decided. And for some people, that's fun. They're kind of challenging themselves to see if they can do what's already been figured out. But I think there's a limit to how often that's fun compared to making your own discoveries and like figuring it out on your own.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of what you were saying earlier about rewards, that you might be prepared to figure it all out if there's a reward, if there's another reason. And I was thinking about this game. It's an adult game. It's not educational. I think it's called Witness. And I bought a copy because it's an open plan game and I like open plan. You roam around a beautiful world and you have to solve the puzzles along the way. And in this one, it's all mathematical puzzles. And the reward is that once you have solved the puzzle, another part of the game opens up so that something else is revealed. And you're on a quest. I haven't got to the end of the game because I gave up eventually because I found it monotonous. Even though I like maths and I can work out the puzzles, there were too many of them. It was repetitious. I thought, I've done one, I've done two, I've done three. And if I'm going to get all the way along this pathway through the jungle, I'm going to have to do 25, 30 of them. And I thought, I don't really want to do that. The reward had disappeared by that stage. It was just, I'd been given a task and there wasn't enough reward to get, the reward didn't seem worth the effort to me in the end. But yeah, rewards do spur us on to do things that have already been done before. Maybe sometimes we like to be challenged. Can I solve the puzzle? Have I got the thinking skills to work out what they want in this puzzle? I look at it and think, now, how am I going to solve this puzzle? And I think a lot of games are that way structured. How am I going to get from this island to the next island? Loads of people have done it before me, but can I do it? Mm-hmm. And so there is value in repeating stuff, but it has to be value of the person who's actually decided to take the challenge on. And there wasn't enough reward. Well, there wasn't any reward for working out all these calculations to do with the cruise ship. What was the reward at the end? You get the answer, but that wasn't exciting enough for my child who was interested in the job. Yeah, maybe one day I could be on a cruise ship working this out, but to work it all out when she knew somebody had done it, or there wasn't enough reward. But yeah, it gets really complicated, doesn't it? Because there's no, there's no set answer to any of this. Don't play educational games, only play this one. Don't do things for rewards, but I enjoy earning these rewards. It's a very complicated subject, the maths, isn't it? There are times when we do want to work for rewards, and there's times where we want to do things which aren't real life maths, but we are interested in it anyway. But there was something else you were saying, Aaron. I think it was you, Aaron, that can't remember how I got this thought, but it was about the science and the experiments and working things out for yourself, and how kids can work out mathematical things themselves as well. And I always remember going on holiday with my last four girls, and I'm just trying to think how old Sophie was. Not exactly sure, maybe nine-ish. And on the wall of the cottage that we were staying in on holiday, there was this analog clock. And we don't have a clock at home like that. We've only got the digital one on the microwave, or that doesn't even work properly. No, we don't have a clock where the kids could look at, that my kids could have looked at. And she was standing in the kitchen while we were making lunch one day, and she said, "Mom, you can use the clock to work out your five times tables." And she'd just been standing there looking at this clock and the numbers and what the divisions, and I thought, yeah, she's right, isn't she? But nobody told her that. She'd just been thinking about numbers. Okay. And those are the sort of discoveries that I find very exciting, that kids can think, like, I wouldn't have thought that standing in front of that clock, but yeah. She was standing there and thinking that, and she was very interested in how numbers worked. I assume she still is, but this was talking about her as a younger person.
Yeah, it's so fun to see when they have that kind of aha moment. Ashley, I think you've talked about time telling before. Yeah. Remember, that was something that you noticed.
Yeah, with my oldest, with the microwave, the time on the microwave. Oh. There would have been an introduction to time, but not much, just a little bit. And I do like that example because, I mean, I don't want to say that learning that wasn't serving a need, like in solving a problem to do something else, because maybe it was, I don't know. But it just seemed to be a real interest. And then also like curious about it. And because their mind already thinks that way, just really enjoyed it. I guess it was more so being playful with it. And I remember those days just watching, you know, the return to the microwave and playing with the timer and stuff. And I was like, it was all them and nothing to do with me other than observing and listening to whatever they would say about it. It was one of the earlier, I guess, like unschooling moments where I was like, oh, they just learn these things and I don't need to put it in front of them. And what you were talking about, Erin, like what a different experience that is than if what we all do, right? Eventually with kids, or not everyone, obviously, but like in school and whatnot, time to learn how to tell time and, you know, the different clocks and how to read a clock. And I remember not long ago, I think it was at Christmas time and we were at my in-laws' place, and it would have been the kid's great grandmother. She had a watch on, an analog watch, and he would have been eight still. He would have been eight. I think she said something or he asked a question or something. And anyway, she figured out that he didn't really know how to use an analog clock. And I could see her wheels turning. Like she was kind of like, I think that's important that they learn this still, but is it still important? Like she was kind of going through and she was asking like, I don't see, she was saying like, I don't see these clocks up in the walls anymore. And she asked him, do you have a watch? And he does, but he never wears it. And I think he only has a digital one. And then the conversation of how everybody has the time on their phones now, and he doesn't have a phone yet, but he will eventually. So it was interesting because she's 87, I think. And she was really thinking about, you know, her first thought is it's really important to learn how to tell time on that still, I think. And then I saw her kind of get to the other end being like, maybe not. And we didn't come to a conclusion. But what kept coming up with all of this and just talking that out too, is that once you kind of do life this way for a while, there's that trust in that learning's always happening and trust that they will figure it out when they need it. So if he needs to know how to, or wants to tell time using an analog watch or clock, of course he'll be able to do that. So just that trusting, I think, is where you don't always start there, right? It's a bit of a journey to get there, and having those little examples, like that telling the time one was a big one for me.
So it you know, it occurs to me as we're each giving these different examples, like with April's kids' business and the time telling and just the different things we're talking about. Like if I was listening to this, I can imagine, you know, people kind of like, oh, you know, these, you know, here's this kind of unschooling math, you know, because often it's stuff like cooking and businesses and stuff like that. And so I guess the question is, and I mean, you probably know what my answer would be to it, but I think the question is it enough? Is it real? Is it deep learning? Because I think there's this idea that math, I mean, we certainly hear this a lot about higher levels of math, but just math in general, but it's the argument that's used because it's pretty much known that a lot of the math that we use, that we learn, we don't end up using. And so I think the argument that is often used to kind of counter that is this idea, but it's really good for the brain. It's really good if you choose to do, you know, something else, you already have this foundation, or it's just generally good for, it's good exercise for your brain. It's good for brain development. And I think that's where people get stuck in the idea that learning has to be pen and paper learning, that learning, you know, the observation that Sue's daughter made about the fives, that is somehow less real than writing down your five times tables on a piece of paper. Or as kids get into higher levels of anything, you know, whether you're playing board games or video games, or whether you're working on other things for yourself, that your brain isn't getting exercised in that same mathematical way unless it's sort of like a curriculum or a, you know, standardized learning at school. I think it's really hard to, and that's what's so cool when you do see kids do things and you're like, wait, where did, like, this thing, something's built on something else, has built on something else, but I didn't necessarily know that at the time. Because there is a lot of deep learning happening, but I think it's really hard for people to imagine that outside of like, standard stuff. So I think we touched on this last time. If kids want to do, if they need to do more conventional math, either for a job or in, you know, post-secondary education, or they want to do some high school math or whatever, I think that question is like, is that doable? Which we talked about the fact that it is very doable. And as you said, Ashley, if they want to learn something, then they can find a way to learn it. And I think you're not starting from ground zero because they've been having all these experiences that have been building. And in fact, they might have almost a stronger sense of kind of integrated math because it's literally been in context. And so they've learned it, I think, at a deeper level. Like, I don't know, April, I think about a lot of the different reels that you've been sharing around this kind of like math in the wild or spot the learning kind of idea. And it's so in context that you can see how deeply and authentically it's being learned. And that will just build as they get older. But yeah, I mean, for my kids, they use so much math in different ways, stuff beyond what I would know in lots of areas because they get used to it for their particular job or interest, right? So this idea that we are the holders of information and we will always know more than they do just isn't true because they start exploring their own stuff and would leave me in the dust in certain areas.
Yeah, Erin, I have this thought, but I might need help from you guys to get it out, but kind of around your question, and I might be changing the question a bit too. I'm going to think out loud here, but is it doable? Like, I'm just thinking to people who might be wondering, like I hear a lot of parents talk about like, well, I don't want to close any doors. I want to make sure my kids have lots of opportunities when they're older, like thinking about future careers and stuff, right? And yeah, wanting to keep doors open. So we want them to have certain, you know, math skills, because we're talking about math, so that they, you know, might have this career as an option or this path as an option. And I'm just thinking, it's trust in that too, right? So if, because I get that, I understand that comes from a place of good intentions, but I'm thinking about the parents who maybe are having trouble pulling back a bit. Like I'll just use myself as an example. I guess maybe that'll be easier. Like, because math was not a strength of mine in high school, and I was really just doing it because I had to and to get by, when I would go to my dad for help, like homework help, which I did. Maybe I shared this already. This sounds familiar. I quickly kind of learned, don't go to dad for math homework, because he wasn't able to help me most of the time, and it would frustrate him and it would frustrate me. It wasn't a positive experience. So, I think just looking back, I wish he could have said something to me like, well, you know, aside from trying to figure it out, like, it's okay that this is hard, or that you're not getting it right now, or if you feel like math isn't your thing, math is just one area. And we, you know, it's what I say to my kids, we can't be strong in everything. We're all going to have things that we're really good at and some things that we're not really good at. And I think, like, sometimes we feel like math is one of those things where we have to push our kids further. I didn't want my dad, and he didn't push me further, but it would have also been nice to have heard him say, this isn't the end of the world that this feels hard, or that math isn't your strong point. But I think we worry a lot because it's math, and, you know, you can have lots of great jobs if you excel at math. But the thing is not everyone is going to excel at math. If you are strong in math, you're likely going to do some math. You're going to do more advanced math. You're going to maybe you're more likely to pick a career path that involves math. So if you're not that kid, I hope that's making some sense. I had another point, but yeah, go ahead.
No, it makes a lot of sense. And I think it's almost like there's two things I guess that are coming to mind. One is, there's three things actually. So one of the things I want to say is that part of just living a full life, I mean, there's so many things that are part of that. So it's not like we can't have materials or workbooks or math games handy and available and offering them. Again, I have a couple of kids who really enjoyed workbooks. Like, they loved, again, the reward. They loved that idea of finishing the page. And I don't know, there was something at the end of it. Like, that's just worked for their personalities. So I just kind of wanted to say that I don't think that, learning math in a self-directed way means that we're not ever going to use materials or workbooks or any of, you know, math games or any of those things. So I just kind of want to put that out there, because we certainly have lots of those and have swapped them in and out as made sense. But then secondly, I think, yeah, like, so I guess to my point, we can do the math that it is certainly possible to do whatever math kids need. Mm-hmm. If they haven't necessarily gone through the standardized process, because there's just so much being integrated and learned that it may not be on the same timing, mm-hmm. but it's certainly possible. But to your point, there may be times when somebody just doesn't learn in a way that it makes sense to pursue that. And the examples I would give around that are the huge numbers of people who came through the school system mm-hmm. and were never really able to grasp a lot of concepts. You know, my mom, and she says this very publicly about herself, she really
really struggles with mathematical concepts. She went to university for other things. She had a professional career, but she really, math is just not something that her brain just, or at least math in the way it's presented in school, was just not something she was ever able to capture. And I know people who've been quite successful in their careers and family life and everything else, who have said, I never really grasped long division, or I never was able to kind of quickly or accurately get my times tables. Going to school does not guarantee that. So I think to your point, Ashley, to be able to just say to people sometimes, yeah, this might not happen, or it might not happen right now. I mean, April had shared such a great example of that in the last episode, I think, for a university course, where you were just were not in the zone for that particular time period. Now it kind of came to you later, but it might not have. And sometimes that's just the reality. Yeah. Like math is just, it's useful when it is, but all kinds of people, just the same thing with things like spelling. Mm-hmm. Not everybody comes through the school system and ends up being a good speller or a good writer or.
And learning math you don't have to work on math concepts for years to learn a math concept, which I think I hear I've heard a couple examples of people who, I'm thinking of one unschooler in particular, she shares about how she did a little bit of math growing up when her mom would get nervous, but really all her math learning happened later on and she learned what she needed to. But I remember thinking that even back when I was in teacher's college, kind of starting to question, oh my gosh, like, and maybe it's because of my own math experience. But I kind of had like a light bulb moment of like, oh my gosh, all this focus, so much focus on math year after year, and this idea that, and it does, it's not to say it doesn't build, but you don't have to spend years learning math concepts. Like, you can do it in actually a pretty short amount of time, and there's no, you know, what's, there's no difference, right?
Well, it makes me think of my job. I often think about this with my daughter's ballet class, and there were kids who started really young, and then my daughter started maybe like, I don't know, six, and then she had a friend who joined, I don't know, I want to say maybe when they were 11 or 12, and they definitely had some catching up to do, but it didn't take them 7 years to catch up, because the stuff that the little ones were doing, I mean, she had learned that stuff just naturally through life, right? So I think there are a lot of things like that where we present things at a certain age, but if you come at that at 14, you already know those. I mean, I think I've shared that example with my older son with swimming lessons as well. And the swim instructor was like, he's never taken lessons and he's already, you know, and I'm like, well, yeah, because, you know, he's motivated. He's an athletic guy. It's not going to, he didn't need to spend 2 years blowing bubbles or whatever, like the 5 and 6, you know what I mean? Like it's just, and I wonder if it's very similar to kind of to what you're saying, Ashley. It's like these things have kind of been dragged out, but when you're motivated, they don't need to be. Yeah.
Maybe it's also, I had my last two children were very different. One really got excited about maths, one hated it. And then, but it's like everything. One, you like music or you don't like music. Your passion is history or it's not history. Your passion is drawing or you can't draw a thing. Everything else is okay. To have your own, I don't like history. Maybe I do like history, but just say I didn't like history. Nobody's going to say, well, you've got to drum it all that history into you. It's like you were saying last time, Erin, that math has been put on that pedestal and it's above everything else. But just like everything else, our children have a natural aptitude and interest in something or they don't. And that's quite all right. And I was thinking, talking about strewing, and I was strewing for a few reasons, but one of them, my strewing always was very well received by one of my daughters. She would love to go and visit all the websites and sit next to me and discuss cruise ships and whatever. The other one was not interested in the slightest. And when I used to say something like, well, who's going to do your maths for you when you get... And she's, and my, this was Gemma Rose, and Sophie said, she'll do what she's doing now. She'll get me to do it for her. But that's not quite true, because she picked it up on her own, in her own way, like we've been talking about. What I can't see into her head, but she learnt all the maths she ever needed to know in her own way. But for the record keeping, I was strewing two different ways. Strewing to excite my kids, strewing... it was strewing. I would take the passions of my kids, like Shakespeare, Jane Austen, art history, which were all things my youngest was interested in, and then I would sit down and Google maths in Jane Austen or maths in art history or whatever, and it was amazing how much maths I found that she was coming into contact with through her passions, which allowed me to make those homeschool records notes without making her do maths. Not that I was going to make her, but without that pressure, I could prove to the education department that she'd come in contact with all sorts of things like auctions, and she knew how much things were worth. And but on the sideline, even though we had researched the most expensive painting in the world, we had so many fabulous conversations about things like, well, if that painting was discovered to be a fraud, it would be worth hardly anything. But why did everybody love that painting when it was worth a lot? And it's still the same painting, but now they know somebody else painted it. Why hasn't it got any value? All these side questions that she was most interested in discussing, but you wouldn't call them maths, but we were in that topic of money, why something devalues, why something has a lot of value. How does one painting become so, why are people willing to pay so much money? Do they really love the art, or has it got more value in another way? And so, yeah, I was always Googling things like, what's the maths in all the things she was interested in. But this morning in preparation for this, because I'd forgotten about what the actual maths we did find in various passions, I Googled maths in Shakespeare, which had Shakespeare, I think it was Shakespeare. A whole lot of things came up. Apparently, Shakespeare, you could call him a mathematician. But I thought, wow, I would be interested in going and reading a bit more about that. Not because, well, I do like maths, but the two subjects coming together, the maths and the Shakespeare, I find fascinating. And we used to watch Shakespeare all the time and read Jane Austen. You just think about Jane Austen's times and how money was such a big thing in the time. Having five unmarried daughters in Pride and Prejudice was a huge problem for her parents. No wonder that was the central issue in the whole story. And you go into who can inherit and who can't and who has a living, and so many... It was pounds, wasn't it? So many pounds a year they had a living, and they graded their suitors on how much money they would have and all this. And you think, well, there's, we were talking, Ashley, about maths, seeing maths in our everyday lives, but have we also looked at the maths in our passions or our children's passions? And yes, we see them in games, but sometimes we can find the maths in some quite obscure places that our children are coming into contact with, they're reading about or whatever, and the parent hasn't acknowledged that, they haven't realized. And so our kids are picking up all that as they're going along. As you were saying, Erin, I think we talked about this last week, that we think that our kids pick up so much stuff that we're not aware of. And I do know years ago when I had my first couple, I used to think, well, if I haven't taught it to them or shared it with them, then they won't know anything. And it seemed like such a pressure for me to have to present everything to them. How was I going to teach them all these things that they needed to know, not realizing they were like sponges, just soaking up all sorts of things on their own, their curiosity and their interests. But this, going back, there's one more relevant thing I made a note about here. And it was, you were talking, Ashley, about how, and Erin were talking about how it doesn't take us long to learn things at the right age. And you might remember, Erin, we were passing around a link once in the community again. So the community is a great resource, by the way. But I just can't remember where, I didn't look this up before we started talking, was... there was an article online somewhere, and I think it was titled something like 20 hours to learn maths. And does that ring a bell? That they just, somebody had taught children at the right age, at an older age, to learn all the maths that they hadn't, and it took them 20 hours to learn it. Instead of repeating it each year and building on the concepts, these children had just learned it all in 20 hours at the right age later on. Yeah, like learning to read later on or learning ballet later on. And 20 hours was all it took.
Yeah, it was a study. Yes, yes. It was, I'll be able to find it.
It's in a Peter Gray, sorry. It's in a Peter Gray book.
It's a Peter Gray
book.
And it's, I believe it's about SAT prep. And for kids who decided that they had never done any formal math, but they decided that they wanted to write the SAT. And I think he said it was, yeah, about 6 weeks, just a few hours a day, and even less if they got a math tutor or something like that. But yeah, it was a very small amount of time compared to, I think, what most people would imagine.
Mm-hmm. What is the answer to your question, Erin, about whether our unschooled children will be prepared later on if they need it?
Yes.
They can just catch up quickly.
This makes me laugh.
If they need particular skills.
Exactly. This makes me chuckle, though, Sue, because if Haley happens to listen to this episode, I remember having a conversation, not on the podcast, just Haley and I. And not that I doubt Peter Gray's findings. I'm sure his study is up and up. But I remember saying to her, because my kids, some of my kids, you know, they did various things to get prerequisites for whatever. And I remember saying to her, it definitely took longer than 20 hours. So the point is a good one, though. I think generally speaking, it's a good point that when kids are at a certain age and motivation, all those years that it took to learn some of those are just kind of already there. But I do chuckle with you mentioning that particular study, because I think Haley and I were talking, and I said, I don't think I called it a Mythbusters episode, because I do believe Dr. Peter Gray's study, but I just said, in the case of my children, it took a bit longer than that. But no, I think it's such a good point. Generally,
maybe for our unschooled children, it's a lot of about learning the notation, the accepted notation, and the like. For example, my daughter could work out how far she'd run, how many extra meters she would need to go if she'd run so far and she needed to get to 5 kilometers. She could work out her speed, but she didn't write it all down in a form like you would in an algebraic sentence. And she wasn't familiar with, for a long time, with all the symbols, the plus, the minus. She just knew how to do it without action, because she didn't need the language. I suppose it's like being able to speak, but not being able to write your speech down, so that she was quite capable of doing it, but she didn't have to share it with anybody. So she didn't need to write it down to give to somebody to prove she'd done it. But when she was about, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Go on.
No, you go ahead.
You go, Erin.
Okay. No, I was just, no, I think you should continue, because I'm realizing mine's a slightly different train of thought.
So go ahead.
I've only got a couple more sentences. I just was going to say that when she was 14, she decided for herself she would go and learn the notation so that she could talk to people like the school kids that she met when she was doing her activities like St. John Ambulance, and when they were writing things down, maybe for St. John Ambulance, they were writing things like, how many bandages are we going to order? And they were using conventional type ways of noting it all down. And so she said that she would go and do a course. And she did that for about maybe 6 or 9 months before she got fed up. But she picked up what she wanted to know in those 6 or 9 months by doing. I think she just went up to Khan Academy. I was looking for all these fabulous websites. And I said, well, what do you want to do? And she said, oh, look, Mum, she said, Khan Academy will do it. She said she wasn't interested in being entertained, or she just wanted the basic facts and it was free. So that's what she did. And she used it like the way she wanted to use it. She just did the bits that she needed or wanted. But anyway, Erin, what were you going to say?
No, just the idea of the functionality of that for your kids, and that the some of those symbols seem irrelevant when you're just doing things functionally, right? It just doesn't feel relevant unless there's a reason. And you know, she found a reason, and so she started doing things that way or using that language. And the other thing I was just going to say is that my kids use so much math in their various jobs. Like, I've been thinking about that lately. Relatively easily, and not just always basic math, like various, my daughter uses a lot of geometry, I'm noticing lately. And well, even for myself, I going into like social work, I would not have realized how much math I was using, but I am working with budgets all the time. And so I'm thinking mathematically a lot. But learning specific math skills is not the same as understanding the big picture of budgets and how, like, it's actually a separate skill. So a lot of the things that we think of as math actually require other types of thinking. It's not just the numbers. April, is there any, I feel like I haven't given you much of a chance in the last little bit here. Is there anything else coming to mind for you before we pop off?
There was just one thing that I wanted to mention that tied actually to two different things that Sue was talking about. I think for anyone who doesn't know who's listening, I learned these things recently, and they can come in really handy, I think, if you kind of use them in the way that makes sense for you. Sue, you were talking about AI, and I think that a while back, the only way that you could, or there was a specific website where you could find out like what's the math in this, or what's, you know, what type of learning is happening from this activity. I'm pretty sure now that you can use that GPT for anything that's related to that. So if you want to find out what type of learning is in any activity, you can just type that straight into ChatGPT and you'll get a list of responses. The other really interesting thing that you can do with ChatGPT, and I've only kind of dabbled in this a little bit, but let's say you have, this could come in handy for strewing, I think, or for people who have to do reporting. You can go into ChatGPT and say something like, give me a list of 25 hands-on math-based activities for a 10-year-old child who loves fishing, Fortnite, baseball, and art. And it will literally, in seconds, spit out 50 activities. What did I say, 25 or 50? It will give you that list. And then, you know, you can look at that and be like, oh, okay, my child might be interested in this one or this one or this one. And then you just refine it and you say, you know, give me some STEM activities, or for a kid who's interested in engineering, or for, you know, you can literally say anything. And it's like the more specific you can be with the type of question that you ask, the more impressive the results will be. but you can just keep refining it and you can ask for as many as you want and you get the answers in seconds. So it's like, for the time that I could spend trying to figure out two hands-on things or digging through Pinterest for those same activities, you can really get a lot out of ChatGPT in a very short amount of time for somebody who's not familiar with how that might work.
That's good to know, April. Thank you. And I think too, sometimes we, like, it's a good reminder that it can be good and helpful to just literally directly look for some resources or ideas, because I just feel like that might be important to say that sometimes we can have this idea that kids are, you know, just self-directing their way through the day. And some kids are, and for some periods of time, some kids are, but there can be times where it's really helpful for us to think of some ideas to pull in and bring to the table. So I like it for that purpose too, that you mentioned that.
It's a bit like if you had found something to do with history, just say a documentary, just say that you think your child might enjoy, you might say, oh, look, I've discovered this documentary. Would you like to watch it with me? Or I've made a note about it somewhere in case you would like to go and watch that another time or whatever. And it's the same with maths, isn't it? That I know that my child enjoys origami or something that uses maths. I found this activity that, you know, there's a list of activities here you might be interested in, and even say, you know, I rather would like to do that one. Would you like to do it with me? We don't have to be completely hands off, do we? We can strew just to enrich our kids' lives, but also to, I always interested when people give me ideas for my own passions, and I think, oh, I hadn't thought about doing that, or I hadn't heard about this resource, or I hadn't seen that movie. And I think maybe it's the same way with our kids, that they might welcome sometimes some ideas, especially if they're at a loose end. Just go and have a look at that list that I found that's to do with fishing or whatever it is. You might find something there you'll enjoy. And I did that with my kids, and they sometimes did and sometimes didn't. It was as what stewing is, isn't it? It's invitations. It's not it's not expected, but it's invitations. I really love that word, Erin. I've been thinking about that ever since a previous episode that I was invited to be on with you, and we were talking about defining unschooling, and you, I think, introduced me to the word invitation.
Oh, invitation, yeah.
And that's become one of my words. That is just what I love about chatting with other people, like us today, is that we gain so much from it as well as sharing what we've learned. We ponder ideas together and pick up new thoughts about things that we think that we already know a lot about, but then we think, well, we don't know everything, do we? Somebody else has an idea that we haven't considered yet, and that was one that I really love.
Yeah, and I don't think that was my original. I don't know where I'm not sure where I heard that, but I really like it too.
It's a concept that is, obviously it's unschooling. It's not a new idea about unschooling, but framing unschooling as an invitation, I thought that was a good way to put it. And that word has sort of stuck with me I think I went away and wrote a blog post about invitations after that. I'm almost sure I did, because it got stuck in my mind. Yes, unschooling is a part, well, part of unschooling is invitations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that way of thinking about it as well. Is there anything else? I think we covered quite a bit again. So we're good?
Okay. Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Thank you so much, everybody, again. This was really good, as Sue said, just to, kind of bounce off ideas. And I find, like, build on each other's as well, right? So much appreciated. And have a good rest of your day or night, depending on where you are.
Thank you so much, Erin, for inviting me back. I've really enjoyed being part of another episode. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome, Sue. Thank you. Thank you, April.
Thanks.
Night.
Night. And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and maybe helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Haley can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. I, Erin, can be found at Everlearning, and Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves. We'd be very grateful if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might appreciate it. Thank you for your time today.